Everybody's a winner at the JCPenney Mystery Sale. Hurry in store Wednesday through Saturday for a coupon giveaway while they last. You can peel and reveal an extra 30, 40, or even 50% off. Use your coupon to enjoy even bigger savings on Easter apparel and spring fashion. So, how much will you save? JCPenney, make everybody count. Offers valid on select styles 327 to 330. Exclusions apply. Giveaway in store only. Must be 18 or older. See store or jcp.com for details.
Luke Dukak was in Pittsburgh with the Wolfpack as NC State advanced to the first Sweet 16 in 9 years. Last time they did so, Mark Gottfried was the head coach. Kevin Keats has gotten to the Sweet 16 now for the first time. Some people will think this is an improbable run, and maybe it is based on what they had to do just to get into the NCAA tournament. But I just said a second ago, Luke, that I think this team is kind of where it belongs in that, to me, it was an NCAA tournament team. I thought from the beginning of the season, having watched them play early, it just took them a while to figure it out. And then they had their ultimate backs against the wall type of an atmosphere in D.C. because they had to win that tournament to get in. But once they got in, I mean, I thought they were as good as anybody that in their little area of the draw.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that NC State is, if you're going to sit down with a pen and do this, is one of the top 16 basketball teams in the country. But they've beaten who's in front of them. And,
right.
And look, you need some bracket luck, right? That it's a lot easier to beat Oakland. Not that it was easy to beat Oakland. It's a lot easier to beat Oakland than it is to beat Kentucky. And things have fallen their way, whether it's Michael O'Connell's shot dropping against Virginia, drawing Texas Tech, which was NC State was just an absolutely abysmal matchup for Texas Tech. It was possibly the worst possible 9, 10, 11, 12 seed that Texas Tech could have drawn, just because this is a team, very aggressive perimeter defensive team that just didn't have the big guys to handle what State had. I'm really not quite sure how Texas Tech had the season they had in the Big 12 after watching them, but clearly won a lot of games and is a great defensive team with some really good guards. And NC State, made relatively quick work of them. You know, if Kentucky had beaten Oakland and, was playing with confidence, which the Wildcats did not, was playing together, which the Wildcats did not, that's a different matchup for NC State. That's a tough one. But, Oakland is a team, objectively, that NC State should beat, and gave the Wolfpack all it could handle and more. So, I think when you look at what's happening with NC State right now, I do agree that it's a team that's finally playing to its potential, and it has taken a while to get there. But the other part of it is, and let's go back to another former NC State coach, you got to make shots.
Yeah.
And the one thing that these seven games have had in common, really from the second half of the Louisville game on, is that NC State has shot the ball really well. It shot the ball well inside, shot the ball well outside, missed a lot of bunnies in the first half against Oakland. That could have been a much different game.
Yeah.
But for the most part, when you look at, especially look at the last 2 minutes of overtime, Jaden Taylor makes a big shot. DJ Burns makes a big shot. DJ Horn hadn't done anything all game, makes a big shot. So, you got to make shots, and NC State has found ways to make shots when things haven't gone well. And you go back and look at the losses NC State had sort of in February and into the ACC tournament. A lot of times it was a scoring drought that killed them. Certainly that was the case against Duke. So when you go back and look at all of that, you can see how the Wolfpack turned the corner. And now they're playing with that confidence. They're playing with that belief. And the reality is, they've found 7, 8, 9 guys who can hurt you, and at various times, all 7, 8, 9 of those guys have.
Yeah, Ben Middlebrooks had a lifetime in the win over Texas Tech. It was remarkable. Two numbers that jump out at me from the win over Oakland, and my only pushback is I don't think it's easy to beat anybody. If you've gotten to this tournament. Now, granted, Connecticut versus whomever, in the first round, even the second round, that's not going to be difficult. But for NC State or for Clemson or anybody in the middle of the bracket, and I put Duke in that category too, it ain't easy beating anybody. Those teams have all they're used to winning. They're obviously good enough to beat anybody, and a school like JMU went to Michigan State on the opener and beat the Spartans on their own floor. Obviously, Vermont has a ton of pedigree when it comes to winning their league and getting to the NCAA tournament. But back to the Wolfpack, the two numbers that jumped out at me were DJ Burns playing 42 minutes against Oakland. No chance I would have thought that was. I thought they would have needed 19 overtimes for him to get to 42 minutes. And DJ Horn going 40 minutes between buckets. No way they win that game if you had told me beforehand that DJ Horn was going to go 40 minutes without a field goal.
Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter, Capital Financial Advisory Group. You have a 401k, but you're changing jobs. You're taking that 401k with you. Next step.
Well, a lot of people leave it behind, which is not a good thing. I mean, if you're not at the company anymore, your 401k shouldn't either. And that's when it's time for my 401k survival
box set.
You see it right here. I've got workbooks, guidebooks, DVDs in here that explain everything about your 401k. More importantly, how to build a lifetime income. It's a $300 value. I'm also going to give you a total retirement plan, which is a $1,000 value for the next 18 of you who call right now. No cost or obligation.
Call 888-843-0013 or text Adam to 600-700.
Adam Gold is a paid spokesman. Investment advisory services offered by Capital Financial Advisory Group, a North Carolina registered investment advisor.
Yeah, I mean, but that's a testament. You know, I called the Texas Tech game before it started, the Ben Middlebrooks game, because that was just a matchup where Texas Tech was going to have to take away DJ Burns. There were going to be opportunities for a guy down low. And what NC State has done, and this goes back to the Louisville game when DJ Horn was out completely, they have found different ways to beat people. One thing I talk about a lot of times in college basketball, you see it with Virginia, you see it with Wake Forest, is do you have a plan B? Are there different ways we can beat you? You know, you look at historically, what were Roy Williams' principles at Carolina? We're going to out-rebound you. We're going to attempt, we're going to make more free throws than you attempt, and we're going to outrun you. Those are three different ways to beat people. One is, we're going to outrun you. We're going to outpace you. We're going to run the ball. Two, we're going to beat you inside with toughness on the boards. Three, we're going to drive the ball and get to the rim, right? They have that's always been, you know, the way that Carolina's found ways to beat people. You know, you look at Virginia, they fall behind by double digits. They don't have a second gear. There's no curveball there. Tony Bennett's not going to come out and press you. So, and the same thing with Wake, but the other way. If Wake's shots aren't falling, they're not going to grind it down and beat you. They want to run. They want to get going. They want to make shots. And they're good at it. And they're a good team. But they don't have a plan B when that's not happening. I think what we've seen with State over these seven games is not only does NC State have a plan B, it's got a plan C. It's got a plan D. They have found different ways using different people to beat you. Like, if Mo Diarra had played like this all year, State wouldn't have been on the bubble. You know, I mean,
he's been playing well a lot lately, so.
No, but all year long, though. I mean, he's been a legit stretch four threat in the postseason. Michael O'Connell has had some good moments during the year, but has come out and been like, you know, he started because of the way things are going, but he's basically been a six-man combo guard who's come in and made some huge shots. His drive in regulation, when it was very similar to DJ Burns' three in the ACC tournament. Ball comes to him, top of the key, hot potato, shot clock running down. Burns took a three and made it against every odd possible. O'Connell puts the ball on the floor, drives, goes underneath, throws up a scoop layup, gets fouled, gets the 3-point play. That's the way that you win in March. You find ways to do things you're not used to doing, and you do them well. And NC State just, you know, has found a way to fire a lot of bullets at people.
Luke Dukak of the News and Observer is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show at Luke Dukak. One more thing about basketball. Look, we're all patting you know, the ACC on the collective back here for getting a quarter of the Sweet 16 in. And this is something I've been saying all year. I just want your thoughts on it. It's not that the ACC was, I mean, we know that the ACC was better than people gave it credit, but we also know that the ACC was not great. It was not an awesome league this year, but it wasn't as bad as people were making it out. And I don't think there's that big a difference between where the Big 12 and the SEC are and where the ACC is. But this is sort of a reminder that, I mean, I think it's a reminder of that there just isn't as big a difference as people want to make it out to be.
Yeah, I mean, I actually just have a column that just posted on this, kind of trying to separate some of the fact from the fiction with why the ACC continues to sort of confound and overachieve in March based on seeding and honestly based on analytics. You know, there's it's unusual. I mean, some of it really, honestly, is probably small sample size. Mm-hmm. You're really only talking about each team playing two games. You could pick two random games from the middle of the season, probably make the case that the Ivy League's the best league in the country if you pick the right 2 days. That said, there's no question that the ACC continues to outperform its seeding and its predictions in March. It's really hard to narrow down why. I think there are a couple things, though, that we can agree on. Number one is, based on the way the committee selects the teams for the NCAA tournament, ACC was actually treated pretty fairly.
Yeah, you know, I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, no, but we're getting this. One of the arguments is, oh, there should have been more. We're playing so well. There should have been more ACC teams in the tournament. I push back on that. I think when you look at what everybody knew going into the season, what the parameters were, what the committee was going to look at, Wake and Pitt each needed to win one more big game. And if they'd done that, then they both would have had a chance to be in. They didn't. We knew that going in. So whining about that, and I give credit to Brad Brunell, who was whining about that a little bit, and has kind of moderated his tone to say, we're better than we're getting credit for, but I don't know why. And I think that's the right approach to take if you're a coach, is to say, we need to figure out why we're not being rewarded for what we're good at, and then fix that instead of saying, oh, the Big 12's gaming the net, or, oh, you know, Joe Lenardi doesn't like us. So there are real solutions to this. But the reality is two things. One, ACC was fairly seeded and selected. Number two, people in the national media aren't out to get the ACC. But you got to remember, there's a lot of Big East folks who are tired of hearing about Duke and Carolina and Duke and Carolina and Duke and Carolina. And it's all they hear all year and the biggest rivalry. I mean, there's one prominent national person who you and I both like, who once argued with me that Cincinnati was a better college basketball market than the Triangle. And I'm not going to name him. I like him a lot. You know who it is.
Yeah.
He's very smart. But people get this sort of skewed vision with the ACC because they're tired of hearing about Kay. And they're tired of hearing about Dean and Roy and right. Terry Holland dies. And, oh, God, now we got a list of the glory. They're tired of it. They're jealous. They have a chance to lash out. It's like the bully tripping over his shoelaces and everyone wants to go over and kick him. And in the end, the bully gets up and punches him right back in the mouth. So when you have the 158th ranked bracketologist, or whatever Joe Lunardi is, taking shots at the ACC ex post facto, it's just because he doesn't know anything. He's only there because he figured out that there was a job in this before anyone else did. He's not any good at it. The problem is people like him and John Rothstein and the rogue AI that is John Rothstein, people actually listen to them, and I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I mean, Joe Lenardi is a great guy,
yeah,
but he's objectively not good at what he's supposed to be doing. John Rothstein, God knows. I mean, someone's got to wind him up every morning, get the clockwork moving so it can text every coach and tweet the same nonsense every day. But in the end, the college basketball media sets these narratives, and one of the reasons that they've set this narrative that the ACC isn't good is because they can. It's not malicious. It's not out to get right. the ACC. It's because they're jealous and they're tired of it and they see their chance. And the ACC every March goes out and slaps them back in the face.
Look, I've known Joe Lenardi a long time, right? I've literally known Joe Lenardi about 30 years.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Everybody's a winner at the JCPenney Mystery Sale. Hurry in store Wednesday through Saturday for a coupon giveaway while they last. You can peel and reveal an extra 30, 40, or even 50% off. Use your coupon to enjoy even bigger savings on Easter apparel and spring fashion. So, how much will you save? JCPenney, make everybody count. Offers valid on select styles 327 to 330. Exclusions apply. Giveaway in store only. Must be 18 or older. See store or jcp.com for details.
The difference between Lenardi, who was the 213th ranked bracketologist, and whoever is number one, believe it or not, isn't that great. They almost all get all but one or maybe two of the teams in, right? So there isn't a huge gap, but yes, Lenardi is traditionally near the bottom of that group. So is my friend Jerry Palm. Like, who's a little bit better than Jerry, but not significantly so.
Yeah, but I think the difference between the two of them is Jerry Palm wasn't getting in spats with ACC fans after the tournament right. started. And that to me is the more the example. Yeah, like there's a lot of very prominent bracketologists out there who aren't great because it's hard.
Yeah, and like the guy you referred to. He is also a prominent bracketologist. Yeah,
and his numbers aren't great either. I mean, not everybody is Patrick Stevens. And even Patrick Stevens is over the last 5 years is ranked 70th or something. Yeah. And there's literally nobody who knows more about this than him.
Okay, so great. It's just it's hard. It's hard to predict what these guys in the committee room are going to do.
But the problem is, and here's the big problem, and this is the ACC's problem too. Lunardi's voice is so prominent because of his platform that bleeds into the committee by osmosis.
I agree.
So if he's going to do this, and he's going to do this on ESPN and make these incorrect pronouncements about the ACC or whatever, he's got to be more right because he's flavoring the discourse, and it's not like he's adding cinnamon, right?
I'm with you.
Poisoning the discourse.
I'm with you.
So he's either got to get better at his job or stop talking about things he doesn't know. One or the other.
Final thing about this, I want to ask you, like a minute and a half left. I want to get your thoughts on Freddie Anderson. Everybody in that committee room is a human being who has another job that is way more important than picking 37 at-large teams to play in a basketball tournament. They're all in charge of other things, and there's no way they have enough time to watch all these teams play, and they are going by the things that are in front of them and all of the things they hear repeatedly, and that's where the influence of Lunardi or others definitely work. All right. The playoffs start tomorrow, Luke Dukak. Who is the goaltender for the Carolina Hurricanes in game one?
And no doubt in my mind right now, it's Frederick Anderson. I mean, I don't know what more you could. Are you snickering?
No. I'm not snickering. I'm laughing because I know the numbers for Freddie over the six games since he has come back, and they are cartoon numbers. And eight. 951 save percentage, and it's just crazy.
I don't know what more you could ask of a guy coming back from a long layoff than to come back and play the way he has. You got a plan B, like we just talked about with Kochetkov and obviously Spencer Martin. So, but to me, you signed Freddie, you brought Freddie back. Mm-hmm. He's here because he's your guy to win with. Like we all know this, right? This is the guy that brought you to the dance. You're going to dance with him. And he's done nothing since he came back for me to say that in a month when the playoffs start, he's not going to be 100% and be ready to handle that. Now, can he handle the workload without breaking down? I mean, that's an eternal question with him. But we know when he's healthy and when he's in the right headspace, he's one of the best goalies in the league. And I think that's what we've seen from him, quite frankly, since he's come back, is a guy who, to me, looks like he has something to prove. And it's out there to do it. That I think is good for the Hurricanes.
Yeah. One quick follow up to that. Would you like to see him go a cup like another game in a row? Because Rod has just rotated. So the goaltender who starts tomorrow, if it's Freddie, that kind of tips Rod's hand, right?
Right. Yeah. I will leave that up to Freddie and Phil Schoenfelder. Whatever Freddie needs to do to get himself ready. Not for tomorrow and not for next week, but for the first round of the playoffs. That's the schedule he should be in. I don't care whether he plays in Pittsburgh or not. It is of no interest to me. My concern, whether I'm Rod Brind'Amour or Don Waddell or Tom Dunnan or Paul Schoenfelder or Freddie Anderson, for that matter, is what does Freddie Anderson need to do between now and April 21st or whatever the first day is to be 100% ready then? And then work back from that. If that means playing tomorrow, great. If it doesn't, that's fine too.
Luke Dukak of the News and Observer. I'll see you at the arena when you stop covering basketball.
Hey, that's I was almost going to swing by today, and it just didn't work with print deadlines and whatever. I haven't forgotten. I did tweet the other night during the middle of the Capitals game, which I was following along with three different basketball games from my hotel room in Pittsburgh, that the Hurricanes picked a terrible night to play the craziest game of the year, because I would have liked to have watched all of that.
I mean, it was I don't fault Kochetkov on a single of the six goals that he allowed. And he allowed six. I know statistically, look at the box score, Kochetkov was bad. I'm like, nah, he wasn't bad. I actually thought he was good. The goals were just kind of weird. It was the weirdest second period I've ever seen.
What about the quote-unquote kick save?
That didn't bother me. It just didn't bother me.
Doesn't look like he's getting any supplemental discipline, by the way.
No, I didn't hear a single thing about it. I really didn't think there was anything to it. But
I thought there was a little something to it, but it's something the referees probably should have caught. But I don't think there's anything that requires any intervention at this point.
Luke Dukak of the News and Observer, my man. I'll see you soon.
See you.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.